Welcome to the Grow Your Business podcast. Listen in as we discuss all things business, growth, and marketing with business owners, thought leaders, and entrepreneurs. And now, here's your host, founder of Roundhouse, the creative agency, Saul Edmonds.
Oh, welcome everybody yet again to the Grow Your Business podcast. I'm speaking with Priya today. Lovely Priya from Pivot to Thrive. How are you going, Priya?
I'm very well, Saul. Thank you so much for having me today.
It's absolutely my pleasure. It's a lovely semi-sunny day, I think, in Brisbane. I sometimes speak to people in different parts of the world, but it's actually funny because I often haven't been speaking to somebody who's also in the same part of the world. So hello, welcome. How are you?
Oh, thank you. It's technically a Monday after a long weekend. And I had a 6 a.m. start, finished a networking meeting, finished two. So before 11:30, it's been a very productive morning today.
Oh, lovely. Yeah, it's good when you squeeze a whole heap of stuff in, really, isn't it? With the and I guess I'll slip in here with the help of a good CRM.
Correct. With lots of systems and automations in place, get lots of things done.
Yeah, that's right. And that's part of that, at the heart, I guess, of the tech side of what we'll be talking about is one of the key tools, really, isn't it? Or the key tool. So for people who don't, there's probably like a bunch of people who we both jointly know that know what you do and what you get up to. And some of them maybe like it's always good to expand, but a lot of people who don't know who you are and what you do, would you be so kind as to just explain to everyone what you get up to? And I guess a little short version of how you got to currently be where you are at the moment.
Sure. Okay, so where do I begin? I have to go back to my very first job, which was university lecturer back in India. The first and only job I pretty much did in India for 9 years. So I got my first job after my master's. Even before I graduated, I got a job and that lasted for 9 years. And I did my PhD because I can. I did my PhD in bioinformatics, which is biotechnology done on computers. I was this lazy Indian girl who didn't want to wash petaplates and test tubes, wanted to just sit in an air-conditioned room and work with databases and softwares. That was pretty much me. So right from the beginning, I was a smart worker, not a hard worker. So I wanted to do things efficiently, but not the hard way. So always smart work over hard work. Mm. I moved to Australia in 2016. Northern Territory sponsored my visa. So I landed in Darwin in 2016. On my fifth day in Australia, I got my first full-time permanent job with Bet365. So thrown at the deep end, dealing with Australian punters was an easy integration into the Australian lifestyle, I should say. Mm-hmm. You can imagine.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah.
So my visa obligation was to live in Darwin for 2 years and work full time for 1 year in any profession. But I ended up staying in that job for 3 years because the money was good and the offers were 65% Indians. So my very first realization after moving to Australia was time equals money, because in India, we get a fixed monthly salary. I can work 8 hours in a day. I can work 18 hours in a day. I would still get that fixed monthly salary. There was no value for 1 hour of my time. But after I moved here, there was a dollar value for every hour of my time. So I started to be like, wow, that was my first light bulb moment. Money, time equals money. So I wanted to maximize it. So I started doing side hustle, which was tutoring, assignment help, research paper help, anything in the academic sector. Mm. Then I moved to Adelaide. I was working with University of Adelaide in the research grant management space. And then I had my second aha moment, or the light bulb moment, which was, as much as I realized time equals money, there's only so many hours in the day.
Yep.
So if I'm going to be trading time for money, I'm going to work till I die, because Australia has such a late retirement age, which is 66, whereas India is 55.
Is it really? Wow, I didn't know that. 55?
It's 55 to 56, depending on if you're working with the federal government or the state government or private sector.
Right.
So in the mid-50s, your career is finished, and culturally it's very different because children take care of parents, parents take care of the children. And when I moved here, they told me I need a funeral insurance.
A wake-up call. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, cultural, maybe not a huge cultural shock, but fairly different.
Correct, fairly different. And, you know, I always believe you have to be a Roman in Rome. So I'm here in this country, and if this is the culture, I'll have to adapt, because I believe in personal life, business life, if you don't adapt to changes, you're not going to survive. Right. So that's when in the 2018, early 2019, I realized if I'm going to be trading time for money, I'm going to work till 66 or beyond, which I was not ready to do. So I was this girl who went on Google and checked how to make money while I sleep. Okay. And then I found all these online gurus like Grant Cardone and Tai Lopez. I got sucked into Tai Lopez social media, SMM 2.0 funnel, and I paid him some thousands of dollars, some Black Friday deal I took. And that was my very first integration in the online business world, but I was still struggling to understand that. And then I found ClickFunnels. So Russell Brunson, the great marketer, as you know, I spent $100 on a 30-day one funnel away challenge. And that is the best investment I've ever done till date, because that 30 days helped me to understand that I can monetize anything. Because until then, I was thinking I'm only qualified to teach because that's what I'm qualified to do. I have experience in teaching as a university lecturer. So I can only monetize those skills in academia, in teaching, tutoring, assignment help. But those 30 days, I kind of realized I can make money selling pretty much anything. So that's how I wanted to scale the social media marketing agency. But as I scaled with a full-time job, family and children, I could not scale that model without relying on people on Upwork and Fiverr, and they didn't do a good job. So I wanted to move to something that I had more control over. And that's when I went into business mentoring, business coaching, but still specializing in marketing and sales. Because I kind of somewhere, I'm somebody who can't sell the intangible stuff. I have so much respect for the mindset coaches, but I don't think I can invoice someone for just a feel good factor.
Yeah.
That's just me.
Yeah. Isn't it? That's really interesting. Because the two of us have a lot of sort of exposure to that big gamut of different sorts of coaches.
Correct.
And I have always found it, like, you know, knowing you and a bunch of other people, especially if there's a big group of people, and it was like, I'm a coach, and everyone's like, generally when people don't know more about that, like with a lot of industries, you put everyone into the same pile and you go, wow, there's just a lot of coaches. But the reality that I've found, and I don't know about you, but like I've certainly found this, is that despite that initial, well, like everyone's just doing the same thing, everyone's got their own very specific, different angle on it, which one, I guess you kind of have to if you're going to stand out. But I feel like that almost organically happens. And like you just explained yours actually in a way that I hadn't, even though I sort of knew that, I didn't know quite from that perspective. And that makes, and that really stands out to me. That's like, you know, it's linked in with marketing, it's linked in with this tool, and then understanding, like you've already explained, your background as well as being one of the people on the ground, like who was doing this stuff. You weren't the sort of the general in charge of the army right from the start. You were one of the troops on the ground who was doing everything and sort of understanding that and rising up through the ranks, like, so to speak. I'm not sure if that's a great metaphor, but but it's like, but it makes you, it gives me at least like a different perspective on your on your why that you're now here, or at least like part of it anyway. But I'll let you continue sort of on with the story. But I think that's like an interesting, I just wanted to interject that there, because it's the role that sort of coaches have for people is so sort of prevalent, so kind of important today for a lot of people, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and I kind of noticed, I don't know if you noticed it in different networking groups that we are part of, people start to roll their eyes when you use the word coach. So they came to a stage, I know, they came to a stage where I'm like, I'm not going to use that word. So I was trying to pivot my words to business mentor, you know, digital product strategist. And that itself is like a roadblock, because when you're going to introduce yourself and you ask me, Saul, hey, Priya, what do you do? I could not just throw the word business coach out there without that hesitation.
It comes with meaning though, doesn't it? Like all words have power. And correct. This is like there's, and even like saying that, right? Going words have power, people are like, oh, it means, I was like, no, words do, because they have meaning, the meaning of something translates to a particular power that they have over your already established idea of what that is.
Yeah. So I was trying to find alternate words for that. And I was like, no, this is not working, because I was not truthful to that. And I was using that term more for keyword purpose, but I just didn't align with that particular word. So I was like, okay, this has to change. So that's when, I think this was 2021 December. And my business would have made, I still use this word because I believe in marketing and sales, because if you don't have the right marketing and sales, it's just an expensive hobby. Because my business back in 2021 was an expensive hobby. I had a big fat paycheck with University of Queensland. That was my last job, a six-figure salary. And my business would have made 12 to 20,000-ish, like the max 20,000, I'm saying. And I decided to quit my job. Right. I was like, I know this has got potential, but I don't have the headspace. I don't have the time to focus on the business because I had a lot going on. So I decided to quit, but the timing could not be so wrong. I didn't realize, because I used to get paid for my December holidays, and I quit my job and I was like, yay, I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a full-time CEO, and Australia shuts down for Christmas.
Yes.
And I was like, what the hell have I done to myself? And I needed work to keep me sane, not kill my kids. And I was like, what do I do? So when I sat down and thought about it, I found there is this huge gap in the information or coaching industry, where there's so much advice in the market, but there's very little action. So you could be my client, showing up for every coaching call every week, and I give you exact roadmap on what you have to do, Saul, but you come back next week and tell me, sorry, Priya, I didn't have the time to do it. Sorry, Priya, I was busy, I couldn't do it. So I'm a typical Indian mum, and, you know, how can I make my clients do the work without whacking them on the backside, you know, in the most legal, ethical way? And then I thought, okay, let me try to bring some kind of an component in my coaching that will help people to take action. So I went on Instagram, put a story, if you are a woman or mom in India, I'm going to train you live for the next 4 weeks to become a virtual assistant. So that was literally an accidental thing that happened because I needed work to keep me sane. So the model I have is people in India pay me some money to come into my container. I train them, and based on their, you know, skill set, based on how good they are, I pair them with my clients. So 2022 January, when my clients came back after the Christmas break, I paired each one of them with a few of my clients, and it was a game changer. So my tagline back then was a business coach who does marketing for you. So I was the business coach who would advise you on the overall business growth, but I will take care of the done for you marketing aspect of your business. So that kind of changed the trajectory, and my graph kind of started growing very, very quickly, right? And then very recently, early this year, so I was doing business coaching with a very specific focus on marketing, and I found the CRM Go High Level early this year, and I immediately knew that's the missing piece of my puzzle, because I was doing marketing, I was doing sales funnels, but I didn't have one powerful toolkit that was helping me explode my business with automations. So when I found that, I was like, this is the missing meat piece of my puzzle. So I onboarded myself as a client. I moved my business. And while I was on a 30-day free trial, I moved 5 of my clients and I learned. But basically, I was getting paid to learn. I quickly recruited teams to do stuff. And now 6 or 7 months in, that's the best decision I've taken, and completely now niching down into the CRM and business automation space.
Interesting. Very interesting. And a very well explained, nice fluid sort of explanation of that path. Maybe that's reflective then, just listening to how you explain that, of how you actually think about things, because being like doing like some level of teaching and education myself, like over the years in like other sort of areas, I know that when you, I've always reflected on the fact that like when you teach something, like if you know it, especially then if you're forced to teach something new, it makes you focus in a very specific way on that task for yourself too. And it makes you learn, as like they say, I can't remember the exact term, but it's like the best way to learn is to teach, you know, which is probably, I think that's the quote, yeah, something along those lines. But like, but it's really true. And I could sort of see perhaps in, this is just an observation, you can say whether you think this is true or not, but like that your, how you think about things in a sort of a logical, practical, hands-on sort of way, had a very logical series of steps that was focused, and you were like, oh, there's a problem, there's something missing, oh, I'll look for this. Some of it, I mean, there's a few little happy accidents in there too, right? Like if this happens, you're like, oh, that's good, I'll roll with that. But like then the, I guess that's probably from speaking to like a bunch of different other business owners and entrepreneurs like you and I do, like there seems to be a common thread of when of the skill set or the ability to sort of kind of roll with the punches but give it focus, you know, is that things happen, you include it or exclude it, you make more of it, but there's a lot of trial and error, right? I mean, that's sort of, and there's a natural, and then going, I mean, sometimes like you obviously don't get things often right and you gotta like throw it out and you gotta start again. That's the entrepreneurial sort of journey, but even the willingness to do that. And I feel like that's probably then a good, like the whole CRM thing and automation, that seems like that's a good, as a tool, it's like a good fit for someone like you too, who has that way of thinking, because it matches in well. It just gives you like this great utility to be able to go, okay, I'll train these other people up to do this, to have that gap, to fill the gap where like you were saying, you can you know, have this great tool, or you can coach somebody and you can give them the, whatever that is, you can give them the strategy, you can give them the CRM and go, here's this, all this cool stuff. But then after, what happens after that? And you address that, you're like, okay, I'm going to do this and this. And I mean, that sounds, probably sounds very logical to most people, like a no-brainer, but the reality of doing it is very different, right? It's like,
I understand. So I think really my different. Core mantra is every challenge leads you to an opportunity, right? Over the years, you know, I've gone through different challenges and hit real, real rock bottom in terms of health, wealth, relationship, like all aspects. But I think all those challenges, I've seen them as an opportunity, Okay.
Yeah.
To give you an example, last year, I celebrated my milestone birthday, in Japan. And on our way back, we had an emergency landing because the front, window of the plane cracked on Jetstar.
Oh,
right.
No.
So we had an emergency landing right in the middle of the ocean, the Mariana Trench, like the deepest part of the ocean.
No way.
And I didn't know there was an American territory called Guam right there in the middle.
Yeah.
So that's where we had an emergency landing. We were there for 24 hours. We came back. So that was like, you know, like the longest 20 minutes of my life.
Wow.
When my kids were sleeping and I didn't know what to expect. And there was chaos and we landed there all good and we came back. But it made me realize that Guam was for the rich Asians, like the crazy rich Asians, right?
Right.
So all I did was a little bit of research on Facebook and LinkedIn, and I found a contact with a lady who worked with different chambers of commerce and stuff like that. And, you know, she wanted to do some partnerships, and I signed one client for $3,000.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so every challenge, like I say to people, if you look at it as an opportunity, there is an opportunity, not just monetary, in terms of collaboration. You know, even now I'm in touch with her. She is trying to get something happening so I can actually travel to Guam and do an event there. So we're still talking after 1 year. So that's still a good sign.
Yeah, there's the happy accident, right?
Exactly.
That's it's something my first sort of encounter with that term was at the Queensland College of Art when that applied to like visual things, but like it applied to going, okay, like how do you get out of your comfort zone of you're good at, you know, watercolors and you just want to do watercolors the whole time. You don't want to do anything else. But because, you know, the creative industries and then kind of everything too, it doesn't just apply to that, is a mental exercise. It's like a stretching your boundaries type of exercise, because once again, like the application of, you know, whatever art skill or whatever is really just the skill. It's like the mind that does it. So having that idea of being open to the happy accident seems like a bit, I guess, to somebody maybe listening who isn't an advocate or doesn't really get it. It might sound a bit wishy-washy, a bit like, oh, you know, that's a bit, I was like, yeah. And it is, because it's the happy accident. It doesn't, you can't engineer it. It just happens. But the key point is, like you were talking about, to first of all, be open to the opportunity, to that possibility. It's not the inevitability of it. It's the possibility. And to turn it around, like you were talking about, and make something of it. And that's a very sort of entrepreneurial approach too, isn't it? Like,
yeah, very optimistic and practical, because I can't control that situation, you know. But so I told my husband, it's happened. Let's just go and enjoy the American territory. You know, Jetstar is paying for it. So we have an all paid, you know, fully paid trip in the American territory. So 24 hours, meals, hotels, everything was paid. So we went and had a bit of fun, and we were on our way back home. So I'm like, you can't control this. So let's just make the most of it. You know?
Yeah, I think that's a really great story to explain that idea too, because it's at the extreme end. You were like, on one hand, oh my gosh, we could die and be like sinking to the bottom of the Mariana Trench, or you're going to land on Guam, which, like, strangely enough, in a strange twist of sort of synchronicity, I was actually literally looking at, and this is really funny, I sort of love these weird little moments, as I was playing Axis and Allies, which is a board game, with my son last night, and I'm playing as the Axis, and I was playing as Japan, and I'm like trying to sort of potentially attack Guam.
Oh, like
on the because it's an American base or was, and it's still like it's in. And so it's like when you don't, and then you're talking about Guam. I mean, that's like
the universe. Yes.
Yeah, to me, those things, and I don't necessarily attribute any specific meaning to them, but what it does do is it kind of, I don't know. I'm not even sure why it comforts me, but it just makes me feel like, oh, that's, yeah, I don't know even, I'm sure somebody would be far more articulate about it. But those kind of like moments of those things and the opportunity, but that feeds back into what we were talking about being open to it.
Yeah.
Having some element of belief that whatever that is, how you turn it around will become good, because it's that, like you said, that positive approach to things. It's a real thing.
I strongly believe in that, because a lot of people, when I walk into, I don't know, Saul, you might not even notice it when I say this, you know, people be like, oh, Priya, I've never noticed this one. So every room I walk into, most networking groups, most networking meetings, I would be the only dark-skinned female in the room.
Right.
And yeah. See, this is what makes you think, because you'll be like, oh, because you don't even see from that perspective, right? Like, who's the light skin, who's the dark skin? Correct. Yeah. And that's what makes you think, oh, really, Priya? And that, you know, just that moment where your eyes went upwards like this, that makes me think, okay, see, Saul doesn't even notice it. But I notice it because, you know, you walk into a room, you feel different. So the way I overcome that challenge is by finding my work within the multicultural space. You know, I've always asked for referrals with multicultural organizations. Mm. I want to work with organizations that help migrant women, that help migrant organizations. So that's how I kind of align my work to feel belonged, you know?
Right.
Because as a migrant, I feel, first generation migrant, the main thing that you feel is identity crisis.
Right.
You don't know where to draw the line. I'm an Australian by document today, but I'm not going to be called an Australian lady or that Indian lady or Priya, that Indian girl, you know? Yeah. So that's not going to go, because that's my identity. But on an everyday, day-to-day basis, where do I draw the line and on how much Australian I should be and how much Indian values that I'll have to pass on to my kids?
Yeah.
I don't eat beef or pork, but I let my kids enjoy a Bunnings sausage.
Right. Yeah.
I'm not strictly religious, but, you know, there are certain things that you can let go. And this is where the identity crisis is real for first generation migrants. But for my kids, this is not going to be a problem, because the Indian side is very dilute and minimum in their lifestyle and beliefs.
Mm. And it's also because, yeah, I mean, it's easy for me to say, because I've never had that. I'm sort of crisis, haven't had that need to feel, you know, like that. Because like from, and I'm sure like a lot of people would generally feel this way too. And it's interesting because over the years, like just, you know, just friends or at uni or wherever, plus like culturally in terms of like food, Indian things in general in Australia, from my perspective, are kind of like a really integral part. Like that's my genuine like view. Like I don't really think about it. It's like, in fact, I've often thought like Indianness and Indian food and Indian culture for me, almost worldwide, has been one of the great sort of exports unwittingly, like just that, you know, worldwide. You go to a lot of places, especially in Australia, and that's always to me seemed like a really successful, and I've often marveled at that. I've thought, wow, they're actually just, without realizing it as a culture. And I think maybe a fair bit of that has to do with the great food and like all the things that go along with that, because it's so nice. And I mean, like I'm a terrible like Indian food tragic. Like honestly, if someone said, Saul, you have to live in India and have Indian food like morning, day, and night, I would be absolutely fine. I would never get sick of it. I'm not saying that. It's like 100% true. Like we're big, you know, always have been. So, yeah. but it's not just that. It's that, but it's an interesting point though, because like, when you don't go through that and your story is very different, you can be in the same room and everyone else is, like you said, just, I mean, it doesn't think twice about it, you know, or, I mean, you assume so. I mean, it's not even like a thing. but it's still, it's an important part of like how you still think, yeah, and finding that point between what is Australian, which even in that sort of question, it's like, okay, you can assume a bunch of stuff about what that should mean. And some of those are cliches and it's like, well, who really cares? And some of them are, I guess, legitimate. But then it depends on who you talk to.
Exactly.
As well, like you talk to, you know, to some people out in the country and it's like a really important part of like culture, particular Australianisms and Australian, you know, whatever you want to say. But then some of them just don't exist for other groups of people. They're just like, oh, well, it's almost cringeworthy.
Yeah. You
know? And people are like, oh, gee, never do that. That's, and it's almost cartoonish. You know, it's like those certain cliches. But I mean, you know, it's in the business world, like now that you've got like this, a bunch of things have come together for you in this way. And you were talking about how the, maybe like the icing on the cake at this point being, you know, finding this great CRM and a bunch of boxes being sort of ticked. How do you now find X amount of years down the track when you're talking to business owners in Australia and in Brisbane, or, you know, just generally in Australia, how do people in this current climate view the use of a CRM as opposed to, because I was having a similar conversation with a earlier podcast about CRMs.
Okay.
And a bit of it touched on the kind of the history about what they used to be. They used to be like really some years ago, a fancy contact database originally sort of. And then they were sort of somewhere email marketing. Then an automation wasn't even much of a thing then, like in like early days, I mean. And now fast forward to 2024 and they're like packed with all these amazing tools. But how do, in your experience, like how do people, most business owners view them? Like, and how do they use them?
I feel, especially with technology, Australia is very, very resistant to change. Change management is very challenging.
Mm.
Especially in the CRM space, I find there's a lot of education required. So if I can get someone on a demo call, I can get them on a Zoom, share my screen and show my platform, it's 100% close rate. That's what I've had. But for them to actually be open to having that conversation and looking at the CRM itself is a challenge, to be very honest. Yeah, because so they feel like it's, she's selling me something, so they feel obligated. So I'm like, just have a look. I just want you to be aware that, you know, such things exist in the world where you're paying for MailChimp or some other email software. You're paying for SMS marketing or you don't do SMS marketing. You have all these different things scattered in different subscriptions. We're going to bring everything in just one platform. And I became a biggest advocate because, you know, I was in India in June and July and I was part of all these different networking groups, which was 80% of my lead gen, 80% Sol. Mm. So my heart literally stopped because I was traveling in the first week of June, but I stopped all the networking activities by mid-March because I had a lot of work to do leading up to my travel.
Yep.
So I didn't do any networking from April and I thought my business would take a dip or my cash flow will be a hit. And I was like, okay, that's the price I'm going to pay for all my travel plans. But surprisingly enough, because I set up my CRM and all the automations, I killed myself working when I was there. So because these systems worked for me and I was like, wow. That was a game changer. So I'm not someone on Instagram who wants to go Bali, sit on a beach and make money. That's not me. Okay. I need my two screens. I need my discipline, right? So all I wanted was to sit next to my dad and still be able to have some source of income. right? And basically, these 2 months was an experiment for me to actually go check that box. Yes, I can do that. I still had a lead pipeline. I still had sales. I still had customers because I had all these systems set up. So I'm like, I want to do more of this to my clients and other business owners so they can actually have the freedom, because Australians love to travel. I don't like traveling. I'm not a traveler. And the more I say that, the more I tend to step on the plane. So now I'm going to say, I don't like money. I don't like money.
What else don't you like, Priya?
I know, right? Yeah. I should start making that list so I get
well,
more
that's
of
a
that.
Great, that's a great plan. Maybe I'll try that and see if and see if I open the door and there's a big bag of money there.
That's it.
I don't like. Yeah. Well, but that sounds like a joke, but it's in the on flipping that around, I guess there is a lot of truth to that. And you hear people like but said in a different way is when you're removing, you know, where you don't like, which might equate to taking something out of removing something or giving that or not deleting it or giving it to giving the task to somebody, that idea is obviously from just a logical point of view, it opens up more time and it opens up. I mean, it just, it has to by its nature open up another set of possibilities. Even if it's a little one, it might be that extra bit of time where it made, you know, the things you can't quantify, where you met that person you wouldn't have met otherwise, who became like your, you know, next best advocate or whatever. Like I remember, and I've often reflected on this as my top best sort of individual chance meeting of somebody sort of ever. And it was when I was in first joined BNI like years and years and years ago. And there was this opportunity, someone in the chapter who was then leaving soon after, they invited everyone to come along to the, at the time, the very, very slow and very small Redlands Business Expo at the time. And it was like one of the early ones, like years ago. And everyone was like rolling their eyes. They were like, yeah, whatever, you know. And me being like the new guy who was like eager to, you know, eager to please and like eager to, you know, just to do stuff. I was like, oh, yeah, sure. I'll go along. Not knowing that like apparently it was really boring and it was useless, which was pretty funny, you know, in retrospect. Of course, when I got there, it was like, I mean, the ghost town with the tumbleweeds was, it's like hardly anyone there. I was like, oh no, this is pretty. But what was really great was like, there was like literally me and maybe a couple of other people walking around. There was all the different stalls. But what was great, because I was one of like a handful of people there, is everyone gave me a huge amount of attention and I ended up having these really long, meaningful conversations. And I ended up meeting these two people who became good friends. One became like an early business mentor and the other one ended up being, you know, through a range of different things with things relating to the government and other stuff, ended up being, in retrospect, ended up probably by, you know, second or third tier referrals, referring us like game changing amounts of business in those early days. And it was completely, and it was only because, it was like purely because I'll do it. I'll go along being generally enthusiastic until I got Correct. There. Until I actually got there and I was like, oh crap. But then it was like, oh crap. And then it was like, oh, no, it's great. And then I ended up having great chats and then got to know because I was able to spend more time.
Correct.
Because they weren't like wanting to move me along because there was like heaps of people vying to talk to them. Mm. It was because of that. And I was like, wow, that's a really, I've often reflected on that and I've gone, that's an important lesson, I think, also just in spending the right amount of time with the right people. And you don't always know that, right? You just got to try it and see how it works. But I think the willingness to try part is really important.
Like, correct.
I think that's an underlying thing that is really, there's always been, whenever I've been like, oh no, I'm busy and I've got to like run around and do stuff. The slowing down sometimes speeds things up. If that makes sense.
Yes.
Slowing down, just go, slow down your mind and just go, what am I doing? Or spend a bit, like 5 minutes longer with somebody. You know, sometimes you're like, oh, crazy. And just to go, just to put that effort in. But what's most, so now that you're in this, like, you know, happy space, Priya, what are you in a happy space?
I am.
I think you are.
I think as individual, like personal life, professional life, my spiritual life, I think this today I'm the best version I've ever been in my entire life.
That's great. That's so great. It's
very,
it's really
honest.
Yeah, it's really nice. And I mean, it's nice genuinely when people are just happy, but then like the flow on effect that it has to other people, it is quite, whatever framework you want to put around it, with energy or just being in the room with people, like it's a really real thing I've found. And you see it in group dynamics too. And it's especially often observed this in networking groups, is it can be like even in small groups, but groups with the right energy, and it's really tangible. And then conversely, it just takes one person who's a bit of a, like, grumbly, you know, to bring the whole thing down, which I've thought is like disproportionately, it's true though. Like I've sort of seen that. So I thought, oh, there's obviously something very important in there, which flows on to all the things we're talking about. And then you plug it into, you know, great tech tools that then just really enhance the underlying stuff, right? Because you have to have the so what's your general opinion these days? Like if you have a specific opinion, if you don't, you can pass the question. If you don't want to answer it, no. Actually you do have to answer it. The whole AI thing. Yeah, I know that it's like, what do you think about AI? You know, is it going to, it's going to be bad or good or like neither, or it's just evolving? Cause it's obviously a very hot topic. And in like what you're doing, cause you use high level, you know, if people who haven't heard of high level, it's a really good, CRM, all in one, CRM, even though they all say that, but like, I think like high level is really quite good from what I can see. But then when it comes to the use of AI just for business, like say if you take out the technology, if you just ignore that for a moment and go the use of it for like what's good about it from your perspective and what's has the potential to not be good.
So I have been an early adopter in the AI space, very specific for marketing. And in my use case, the biggest advantage is all my team members are from India and their first language is not English, right? So the pre-AI period had me doing 80% of the legwork because they'll do the job like technical, for example, podcast editing. You know, I've got a podcast, Pivot to Thrive. So there was my podcast editor used to manually do all the edits. And then, you know, there was the content creation part was still a bit blur and which involved a lot of my time and attention. I've given access to 3 to 4 tools now. And the entire process of podcast is streamlined. Now I give her the Zoom recording She puts it into an AI tool called resound.fm. And in less than 2 minutes, it takes all the filler words, all the gaps, enhances the audio, and makes it look nice and pretty. But then she also does a manual Audacity one. I don't ask her to do that, but she does it because she wants to, right? So that's the AI version doing the, podcast cleaning. And then she puts that into a tool called transcript.lol. In 7 minutes, that tool will transcribe the entire episode, breaks them into chapters with timestamps, gives me an SEO-rich newsletter content, blog post, LinkedIn post, Twitter, quiz, everything in less than 7 minutes.
Mm.
So my involvement in converting that into a post for LinkedIn, designing, writing the description, I don't touch, I don't lift my finger because of these tools. So my specific use case is the language barrier for my team members has been resolved because of the use of AI. This is just one specific use case.
Interesting. That's really interesting to me too, because, you know, in then most people listening here, they wouldn't, well, I'm assuming that wouldn't be something that they would have maybe needed to have addressed. But you're saying that's like, aha, that's interesting too. Like the circumnavigation of like language barriers and things too. And yeah, I was actually just as you were talking too, I was thinking, I guess about where people, because you were saying that the person who was organizing it for you, she then wants to do, you know, some extra things then as well. So it's like the point, you know, for me, it's not really like a good or bad question. It's the, because the thing on its own isn't really a thing. It's the use of it by
correct
people. It's like how people use it or don't use it, or people going and you saying that she's the one to do that. It's like the sweet spot for me with these types of tools is where you would otherwise say, you could argue, is a human doing it going to ultimately better for particular tasks or particular, you know, authenticity? It was like, yeah, in certain things. So, but therefore you could then also go, okay, so what parts of those tasks, like just run of the mill, you know, things that don't necessarily require skilled, I mean, labor, so to speak. It's like when the industrialists started creating factories to mass produce things, is they took away, they couldn't rely on artisanship for things because it takes too long. They had to bring people in who could be trained for, you know, certain parts of things, and then to mass produce things quickly. And that was the only way they could like do that and have these big lines that like split the tasks up into things that don't really require, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years of training to do. And they can still be good at that sort of one task. But then where those two things come together, it's like having the right tools for the right tasks that don't require massive amount of like specific skill. Then skill craftsmanship for tweaking. I'm like, she's in there still tweaking some stuff that does require somebody with, you know, for that. And she just wants to do it too, you know. So,
correct.
I mean, so where those two things meet for me feels like the sweet spot with AI. And I've even found that with some of the design tools that have been introduced into Adobe. Like I've found certain tools I use all the time in Photoshop to do tasks that one, I wouldn't even have even done in the first place. Mm-hmm. Like, or could I like a extending a scene, like what some, photographers do, you know, which you may have seen, is they give you like a headshot of somebody or their, you know, they don't have their shoulders or their heads like trimmed off up here. and you go, and then now in Photoshop, you can just extend the canvas and fill it in, and it gives you a bunch of options. And I mean, there's no way I would have spent like 50 billion years like trying to work out, trying to Photoshop in like somebody's hairline. It'd be ridiculous. It just wouldn't even do it. So to have those tools, that's like a perfect example of stuff that removes that argument of like, oh, well, a human could do it better. Like, yeah, if you don't want to like blow out your hourly rate for the next like 5 years.
Exactly.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe in that case. But like doing the right, you know, I guess to boil it down, the right tools and the right people for the right job.
Correct. And time is the biggest factor, right? For me, my why is time equals money. So for me, anything that saves me time, I'm in, you know? So that's what I say, people. You like it, you don't like it, AI is going to stay. All right. So you could rather pick and choose the stuff that would help you in your use case. Whatever is your requirement, how will it help you save time, money, and energy? That's it.
And then your coaching, you know, part, if you want to use like the coaching term, but like for people just say, I don't know what we're talking about, because otherwise I'm like, what's a marketing strategist? You know, but like all these terms, they're crazy. but like to go, then your, you know, sort of skill set of strategizing, that's where also I find that, well, it's not an emerging industry, it's been around for ages, but where then it meets now the problem of CRM handing go, there you go, user, there's a CRM, and they're like, thank you, but I don't know what that is or how to use it. Or and then you've got a person to show them how to use it, but then you've got someone like you to go, you know, here's the plan for how to use it, and I'm going to first understand your business.
Yeah.
And then roll. I mean, that's where that's becoming, I mean, that's not rocket science necessarily or new, but I feel like that's certainly something that's much, much more prevalent in people's minds. People are starting to get that as a thing. Do you feel that too? Do you feel that's
used to be? Yes, I feel that. And I think the reason I've had quick wins in such a short amount of time is I don't try to sell them a CRM. I try to sell them a particular solution to their problem.
Yes.
So if I ask them, okay, this is your struggle. You just need this one solution. You don't need the whole CRM set up. Okay. The whole CRM will put money in my pocket. But right now, what you need is the fix for this one problem, what you have. For example, I had a buyer's agent company who had a lot of leads come in, but there was very little conversion. So the business owner had no idea what was happening in those sales conversations and follow-ups. So what we did is introduce them with virtual phone numbers. So I put them on a very economical monthly retainer where we gave them the go high levels virtual phone numbers where you can actually make calls through the cloud system. You don't need a physical phone or an eSIM card or SIM card. They can actually make all the calls. All the calls are recorded. It can be transcribed and you can actually listen to the sales conversation and give them feedback.
Right.
So you know what's happening with the sales team. If the sales team is going to say they made 20 calls today, there's actually proof that they made 20 calls.
Yeah.
All the SMS conversations are recorded. So from a business owner's perspective, there's complete transparency on how the team is operating to find out what's the bottleneck. We get so many leads from Google Ads, but why isn't there conversion? So genuinely, the person tried to call 20 times and nobody answered the phone. So that's not the sales agent's fault.
Yeah, to find out what the – yeah, because there's like any number of gaps.
Correct.
That happen. And you do, like with, you know, really most marketing is trial and error. So trying something, testing it, and then that plus these processes, which is now – you know, tightly integrated into marketing, because I don't know about you, but I feel like, yeah, still there's a lot of people who, when you say marketing, there's an idea, It's really purely what you're like on the one side of what is being sold, how you do that, you know, and then the design side with your brand and everything too. It's like what you're putting out there, but it's not necessarily, they don't necessarily always think, unless perhaps you're like you're in sort of our industry, that it's then all the other things. It's like what's coming back in, and then the importance of the data, and like you're saying, just information and data about, that's the real power as far as I'm, well, not the only real power, but like a key thing, which is why it's always so good, because at least you can make an educated decision. You
correct.
Can make an informed, you can go, okay, well, I feel like, you know, this person's obviously a great salesperson, hypothetically doing an excellent job. Everyone loves them. They're like handsome and they, you know, and they've got a great voice, a sultry voice on the phone, and everyone's like super attracted to them. But like there's something else, there's like really some thing going on, and it could be like some technical, like some little weird thing that's going on that through data and other stuff you identify. And that's the only way sometimes you can, because then there's other things that players, like the business owner's too busy. They're like, I don't want to deal with that. You know, like so-and-so, they're at the top of their game. You know, they should be able to do it, but there's something else happening. So, and that's, I think that's really great, because once again, like you, to me now, talking to you a bit more, you seem to be like the, you're very big on like data and sort of analytics and understanding.
And value before dollars. That's my main concept, value before dollars. If you show them the value, the dollar naturally follows. So if I had asked them, you know, if I was selling them the whole CRM, already they're frustrated that they're getting all these leads, but there's no conversion. There's no point in giving them a fancy CRM that they can't even track, and it's not solving the problem. So the first thing, I solve their problem to find out what's happening with those sales conversations, and then bringing a system to basically track that entire sales pipeline was an easy sell.
That's true.
Thank you. You know, so I think I get my foot in the door with the right solution.
Yeah.
And show them like a taste tester with a lot of money making opportunity for them. And naturally they sign up. So that's why I think my upsells are pretty easy, because I show them the value and then the dollar naturally follows.
Yeah. And it's funny, isn't it? Because all these things are really not, it's not a complicated idea. It's very, that's what most people really want. I mean, that's what I want. You know, if somebody goes, you know, their whatever service, and I mean, some services are very transactional though too. So there's not this, like, this is a bit different because there's a process and it's got,
correct,
and more meaning is applied to it, because, and then there's more, you know, money sometimes, and there's a lot of unknowns. It's, you know, different too. If someone comes over and fixes my, you know, pipe in the toilet, there's this as a logical, you know, to some extent, there's more transactional things, and there's less, and there's ones that have all these other factors to them. And so to me, that then, you know, there's more meaning applied to it. So therefore, if there's more meaning attributed to that service, perhaps it becomes like even more important to do what you're talking. I mean, it's important anyway, right? To be, you know, to be, explain things well. And that's always important, but it becomes even more important because of these other factors.
Yeah. And that's why I feel tradies, like the traditional businesses, like electrician, plumber, mechanic, they all, dentists, they all make lots of money from networking referrals, because it's pretty straightforward, fair and square, black and white.
True.
They know when to call an electrician. They know when to call a plumber, but they don't know when to call a CRM expert, or they feel their, you know, crappy looking website is better. They don't have to speak to Saul. You know what I mean? So I think there's always a compromise, and the importance that they understand on having a nice website, a pretty looking website, a functional website, SEO filled website is important for their business. But you know, there has to be an external push and education to do that. But if you have a wire hanging in your house, you immediately call an electrician because you know the risk of not fixing it. But I think people don't quantify the gaps and the money leaks in the business due to a shitty website or not having a CRM.
No. And I mean, I get that completely. It's there's a lot of things that people don't know until it's right in front of them. Like either that's right in front of them or their mate has one and they don't. And then they can compare the two and go, oh, mine is not great. Yours is awesome. Yeah, that's oversimplifying, but it's often like that. Or something happens or their site gets hacked or they are just...
Or they choose to DIY.
Or they choose to DIY. But then again, that's an interesting... I never have, like, I'm never going to be the person who would say to somebody if they, because of budget or because they want to give it a go or because of a range of reasons, people go, I want to do like a Squarespace site or do this or do that. Fine. Knock yourself out. Like that's great because often it is the right thing at that point in their business. Because then if anything, the thing it'll make people do at some point, I mean, maybe never, and that's fine too. Is that people will go, now I've got something to compare. I'm not a designer. Like, it's like, I'm not a plumber. Yeah, I could like try to fashion some pipes and do some drainage and the plumber's going to come along and go, yeah, that's really terrible, but I'll be really proud of what I've done. But at some point I'll realize I need a proper plumber, I'm not a handyman and you need to do it right. But it's a catalyst for people to have that realization to do it themselves. And that's a good thing. And it's often part of the natural process of, and it's the case with CRMs too. If someone signs up for a free trial, I mean, I still do it to this day, not because I want to try a new CRM. It's more about out of interest for things tech to go, oh, I wonder what they're doing. It's just that. That's me. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, I got like all sorts of trials going. And then, but people sign up for a trial, give it a go and go, whoa, you know, I didn't know Salesforce was one, you know, this or that or so expensive or like, I have no idea what I'm doing. And that's not necessarily the fault of the technology. It's the fault of, well, it's nobody's fault. It's the mismatching of requirements with potential assistance or lack of, or you know, all these like just really human things. It's got nothing to do with like the technology in a way. It's just a misalignment of, it's like I go, I'm not really into cars. And I just want to get a car to go from A to B. And then someone's, you know, trying to sell me a Mercedes, you know, four wheel drive with like AI in it. And I don't really need that. And I can't afford it. But like the, you know, it's just the misalignment of needs then too.
So, and I think that is also another challenge I'm facing right now is my other, you know, friends in the marketing space who sell them stuff that is not required by the business.
Yeah.
And then when I talk to them, I'm like, oh, you don't need, like, you know, I spoke to somebody who, you know, in that niche, she does not need a Salesforce with ClickFunnels, but she was sold a Salesforce CRM with ClickFunnels edition. And I'm like, you don't need it for your business.
Hmm. Yeah. But then it just comes back to, well, it's all those human things.
Mm.
It's like it's, you know, it's not going away anytime soon. People will do what people do. You know,
yeah.
People will try to sell all sorts of stuff where people don't need it. I mean, that's not going to stop. That's going to happen. All that other people can do is go, hey, dude, don't do it. You know, I had to do that this morning. I'm with somebody like, I mean, literally, we just got a domain redirect that's been there for years. The domain expired. It was renewed, and they got on the phone to the previous provider, and they said they had to have hosting I said, you don't need hosting because we already host it. But they were trying to, it was like, sell, sell, sell. Mm-hmm. Like, don't do it because, like, you don't need it. And you're going to, and then they're going to have you on some, you know, plan. But once again, you know, that's not going away. That all that you can, like, just better human contact in, you know, human meaning person to person understanding of, like, you know, you're, that's like, you know, everything you've been talking about, even though there's this big emphasis on these processes, but really, for me, that's just like a manifestation of you finding something that aligns with, like, stuff you wanted to, and you found it and you're like, whoa, beauty. I found, you know, this great tool. And now, like, you're just going forward with it. You've got a great system and a method to, and like the Pivot to Thrive sort of title too is sort of, to me, self-explanatory. That's obviously the idea.
If nothing is working, don't quit, just pivot, you know, because that's all you do. You know, you don't quit, you just keep moving. As you know, in the entrepreneurial spirit, there are days where you just spiral down self-doubt and go and seek and look for jobs. But the next morning you're out there. I've done it. You know, I've done it multiple times. Yeah. But then the next day you're like, shit, nah, that's fine. You know, I can't do this. But then you keep pushing, you keep pushing. And this December, I'll complete 3 years full time, Saul. So
very good. So
I never thought I would reach this stage with such excitement, and it was not easy, but it was so worth it. And I'm glad I pushed myself, to, you know, everything that I did. And yeah, I think my husband was very, very supportive, because as a migrant, you know, 6 or 7 years into Australian life, giving up a 6-figure paycheck with all the mortgage and, you know, 2 kids, it's a big decision. So I told him, just give me 6 months. If it's not working, I can always go back to a job. I will have no regret or shame. That was just me, you know. But in my head, I'm like, I came into this country with a one-way ticket.
Mm.
And that grit was what made me think, I can make it. I am going to make this work.
That's so great, Priya. I would never, ever, ever get sick of hearing those sorts of stories. And that's actually one of the best. I think I say this just about every podcast because it seems to crop up all the time. Is one of the great very stimulating, like, things for me talking to people on the podcast is that those kind of things of, like, the battle of keeping at it is like this constant thread through, like, a lot of podcasts when they explain their stories. I'm like, and I mean, we've gone through that. I mean, my wife and I, and I think there's, like, it's really, I don't know, it's very encouraging to me. And it's really, and it's, you know, one, they're great stories and everyone loves a good, powerful story. I mean, it's like what everything's driven by is by, you know, stories, because you can relate to it. And and I think almost more than anything, people, well, from a personal perspective, I like them because it helps me to keep going and to go, oh, yeah. And I know it's really corny, but I always really love, like, I was never any big, like, I'm Sylvester Stallone or, like, Rocky fan, you know, right? Like the Rocky movies. But I love the story. I'm sure it's true. Unless it was just, like, a great, you know, marketing ploy, of which it, you know, he was clearly, like, a very persistent guy that when he made, I'm not sure whether you know this story, that when he went to make the Rocky movie, because it was his whole concept, it was his idea, and he, like, wrote it and he wrote it and then started it, so it was his baby. And he went to, it was like something like more than 100, you know, film houses or producers to make it, and they were either like no, just time and time again, and he kept at it and at it and at it. And so one of those super, you know, persistent stories that then in its own way is reflective in the movie, because he's like the outcast, downtrodden. I mean, I'm a sucker for those stories. I'm just terrible. It's like when I see like sad animal stories, or I was crying. The dog came home finally, you know, all that sort of stuff. I'm terrible at that. But like those stories, as cliched as they are, there's obviously they're really popular and correct. Powerful because people resonate with them. And I always loved that story. And then finally, and there were people who were then even like, okay, we can make it, we're going to fund it, but like you can't be the star. And he's like, no, still no. It was like he had a vision. And I mean, sometimes those things then don't work out and things are a flop. But then what if they're not? And you do keep at it. And I like those, you know, and your story with that. I think it's wonderful. And it's nice that, you know, because I see you at the various networking groups we go to. And you know, people's presence in places does show itself very strongly, especially in the other groups of people, hey. But you see, I mean, people stand up and talk about things, and like you always, you know, it's always very apparent, you know, with you and then with other people when you are actually passionate about stuff. It's really obvious. Like you can't really fake that.
I can't even fake a smile, so I'm too honest and upfront for a South Indian girl.
Oh, Priya. No, but like you don't have to fake a smile, because you're obviously very, very happy. You're in a good place, and that at the end of the day, that's great for everyone you're working with.
I mean
that's at the heart of it. Like, you know, you hear that other people that we know talk about, you know, you got to be there for yourself first. And I think that's really true. It's like 100%. You got to be, if you're not happy and like, you can't, I mean, I'm sure there's people out there who are good at disguising things for sure, but I'm not one of them. Like
trust me, when I quit my job with UQ, the reason I told my husband, I still remember, I told him, dude, I lost my smile. You know, through COVID, I was just sitting contracts after contracts. I was in the grant management space. So three screens, contract after contract, 8 hours in a day. And it was so monotonous. And I told him, I don't have a social element and I lost my smile. And I told him it's expensive. You know, people don't realize how important it is. And, you know, it was a big fat paycheck every fortnight, but it didn't make me happy. You know, and not a lot of people realize that it is an expensive give up. Like if you're giving up your smile and just staring at bloody monitors 8 hours a day, that's a lot of time to be unhappy.
Yeah.
And my husband thought I was an idiot. He definitely thought I was an idiot. He didn't tell me. But he just felt the reason seemed pretty stupid, immature. And I was just acting like a baby. And I told him, no. Like, you know, when you reach closer to 40, you realize that, you know, you don't have a lot of time left, and it's a lot of time to be unhappy and just staring at monitors.
Mm.
So
what's that? I'm just trying to think of the quote, and I can't think of exactly who it was, and I probably won't get this right, but I'm sure the general meaning will be there. It's like the something along the lines of the saddest words, you know, ever said was
from clown or something, comedian.
Yeah, or like, you know, I think it was like, I wish.
Yeah.
You know, that.
Yeah.
And I think that's really true. I think it is. Like, you don't want to have as much as you can avoid to have any regrets about things.
Regrets.
And it doesn't have to translate to, I'm going to go and do like wingsuit diving from the Alps tomorrow and like kill myself.
Yeah.
It can be a little bit slower than that. Like you can be, it was like, okay, Priya, now for in the next few years, in order to make like your life really fulfilled, you have to do a bunch of crazy stuff. yeah, like if you want to, sure, do it. But like, just do things that make you happy. And that's, yeah. It is. I think things are actually as simple as that. But by being happy, then often translates, in my experience, like real happiness in is actually about like sorry in advance, people, for any potential cliches. Warning, you know, but like that it actually, you feel like the best really when you're actually helping other people out.
Correct.
You actually do. Like it's really when you see like somebody else do something really cool and like, and I've often reflected on why when I play squash and I bring it up every podcast and people are going, there he is talking about squash again. Like, I don't care. I love it. You know, but like I've often reflected on why do I feel more satisfied sometimes if I compare, and I've talked about this at home with my family, and I've gone, I feel more satisfied and more fulfilled after a game. Like if there's a game where I lose and it's been really tight and it's in five games and I lose, but it's been a really hard battle and it's been really enjoyable and there's really great spirit and I lose, as opposed to I've won in three and I've been, you know, very dominant in the game. It's been a good game, but like which out of those things do I always reflect on and go, I'm more satisfied? It's always the first one. It's always the one where, and I mean, then it's even a little bit better if I end up winning in that tight game. Yeah, that's true. But if I have to compare, it's like seeing the other person struggle in like a one-on-one physical thing like that, to me is very rewarding, very exciting. And to me, that's like a really concentrated, obvious example of like, you know, how you feel good when you see other people succeed. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be at your, you know, it's not at your expense, but even if it is like in like a squash game, I don't mind at all. It's like, man, that was epic. It was like, you know, really enjoyable. And it's like there's some, you know, inherent meaning there that, you know, it's just, I don't know, it just makes things kind of worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, that's my philosophical rant.
With squash, which makes it more sportive.
Yeah, but it is. I you know, and you often don't understand why things, you know, certain things have meaning to you, but not other people. But they, you know, that's just through the experience. So with this, on this philosophical slant of the part of the podcast, I'll ask you, Priya, can you let us know a quote or something that you'd like to, that we talked about at the start, that you were going to share with us?
Yes. So I love the hard work and the, I would say, not possibly human approach to hard work as much as Elon Musk. I love his quote where he says, ordinary people can choose to be extraordinary, and it all starts with a choice.
Yeah.
So it's the choices that you make that makes you and your life ordinary or extraordinary. Like, I'm from a very normal middle class South Indian family, moved here as a migrant, and it was just my choices that made me, you know, take some intentional decisions and, you know, choose a life where I can create impact, influence, and income for other business owners. So it all started with my choice. So I think everyone listening has a choice to make in their life. And that's what makes them lead an ordinary life or an extraordinary life.
Yeah, I think that's really true. That's true. And that's a great, yeah, I love that quote too. And like we sort of said before, like this, you know, the difference, the thing about a lot of cliches and the things that sound cliched, The reason why they people keep saying them is because there's often an ultimate truth in them.
Correct.
And then people, it's easy to go, eh, it's like, but why do people keep saying that? And why do people keep thinking about things like that? It's because it is true. Mm. And everyone knows it. It is true. But
yeah.
That's a great way to finish the podcast, Priya. And just before we go too, can you please tell people, we'll have links in the podcast too, but tell people to find out more about you and Pivot to Thrive, where do they go?
So pretty much they can go to my website, pivottothrive.com.au. There are lots of free resources. So in the hero section of the website, there's a quiz that they can do to identify the bottlenecks in their business, what's holding them back in terms of marketing and sales. Once they complete the quiz, there is a score that will be given based on the responses. So there's a marketing and sales score. And there are lots of ebooks that are available. There's lots of recorded webinars. So pretty much everything is kind of lead magnet, and that'll add you to my Monday morning newsletter, which is Monday morning at 9 o'clock. I'll be on your face with my newsletter. If you are getting sick of me, please unsubscribe so I can have better open rates. But if you enjoy it, there's a lot of value in the newsletter that I provide about my life, what I do, events that are happening.
I can attest to that, actually. And I'm saying this for Priya's benefit, although I probably would anyway. But the fact is that that's actually pretty good content. Like, it's actually got good, useful content. I'm always that other cliche that I do bandy around a fair bit is content is king. And
yes,
in that case, like, it's true.
It's hard work gauging all the information about the events happening around, the grants that are open, the awards that are open. But a lot of people in my networking groups have attested that they actually applied for that grant or the awards because of my newsletter. It is beneficial for people. So if you sign up, I'm not going to spam you with unnecessary information. There's going to be a little bit of about me peacocking there that, hey, I'm doing that, I'm doing this. But that's just my touch point to nurture leads. And I would encourage any of you who are listening to just look at the systems that's already been done by people, and you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Just do it. Just do it in a style that suits for you. So lead capture, lead nurture, and convert. That's the basis of the entire business, what I do right now. So just, I'll leave you with a question. You have a fancy website or social media feed, a very, very beautiful Instagram feed, but is that helping you to capture your leads, nurture your leads, and convert your leads? Because if you don't have the right marketing and sales, you just have an expensive hobby.
Posing the question. So Priya's opening the door, and you got to walk in if you want to.
That's it.
Walk in like, hello, what's going on here? Oh, Priya's inside. Having some champagne. There we go.
Just sparkling water cheers. In a fancy wine glass.
Yeah, cheers. Well, thank you so much, Priya. An awful, awful lot of fun. Heaps of really great information for people to unpack and like think about. Probably more questions than anything, which is actually good. That I'm sure that Priya would be able to answer. But the questions, it's all in the, gotta have to start with the question, right? You gotta have to want to ask the question. So, with that in mind, thanks everyone, for listening again to the Grow Your Business podcast, and we'll see you again soon, and say goodbye to everyone, Priya.
Thank you so much for having me, Saul. I totally loved going back to my journey from where it started. This opportunity to just, hit this entire business journey in 1 hour or so. So thank you so much for the opportunity. And I hope a lot of people are benefited through this conversation. Makes them just think whether they're using their platforms right. Like, you're using this platform to tell the stories and spotlight on different business owners. And with time, every organic, effort will compound with time. So thank you so much for providing me this opportunity.
My pleasure. Anytime. Thanks, Priya. Thanks, everyone. See ya.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Grow Your Business. Have a great day, and we'll see you next time here at the Grow Your Business podcast.